Hello and welcome to the hearing. I'm John.
And from Chicago's North Side, I'm Scotto.
And without any further ado, on to this week's album, which is from 2021, about a week and a half ago, Daddy's Home by St. Vincent. Annie Clark, aka St. Vincent, is an American singer-songwriter, guitarist, and producer known for her complex and evolving music and her ever-changing visual style. Daddy's Home is her sixth studio album and her second collaboration with producer and multi-instrumentalist Jack Antonoff. The album is a stylistic departure for Clark, eschewing her usual alternative rock and pop sound, and instead drawing from the musical palette of New York City in the first half of the 1970s, as well as some 70s and early 80s progressive rock. Daddy's Home was released on May 14th, 2021 by Lorna Vista Recordings, produced by Annie Clark and Jack Antonoff, and features, and I'm not going to mention track numbers on this, just names and instruments. If you want the full details, check Wikipedia. Annie Clark on vocals, guitar, sitar, guitar, Dan Electro, well, choral, sitar, guitar players know what it is, module, synthesizer, acoustic guitar, lap, steel guitar, bass, Wurlitzer, keyboards, Mellotron, and vibes. Jack Antonoff on drums, percussion, bass, Wurlitzer, guitar, background vocals, synthesizers, Mellotron, piano, clavinet, clavichord, and acoustic guitar. Basically 90% of it is Annie and Jack. Thomas Bartlett on piano and Wurlitzer. Wurlitzer is an electric piano with a very specific sound.
Right.
C.N. Riordan, apologies for mispronouncing there, on drums. Lynn Fidmont on background vocals. Kenya Hathaway on background vocals. Incidentally, saw an interview with St. Vincent recently, which I'll talk more about later. Kenya Hathaway, daughter of the great Donnie Hathaway. Evan Smith, saxophones, flute, guitar, synthesizer, clarinet, and horns. Sam K.S., drums and congas. Patrick Kelly, bass. We went to college with a Patrick Kelly. I can't help wondering if it's the same one.
I don't know. I don't really think. I don't know if he played anything.
I don't know if he was a musician or not, but I'm wondering now. Greg Lease, again, apologies for pronunciation, on pedal steel. Daniel Hart on violin. And Michael Leonhard on horns. Reminder, I don't edit any songs into our episodes for copyright reasons, but on our blog at johnscotto.com, you'll find links to Daddy's Home on Spotify and YouTube, so you can listen along if you'd like. Note before we get into this, this is our second time reviewing a St. Vincent album, of course. The last time we reviewed her, Actor, in our first year, that was the album that turned me into a fan. I had heard a few songs before that, but it never really connected to me. You had been a fan since like 2012, since Love This Giant.
Yes.
That album turned me into a fan. Now that I've been a big fan for a few years, this will be interesting to discuss because we can really have a good discussion about her. On to track one, Pay Your Way in Pain. Love the head fake with the piano at the beginning. It's just like, you know, barroom piano, and then just breaks into this great groove with a modular synthesizer handling the bass. Love that. Reminds me, I mentioned this a couple weeks ago on air, reminds me of Talking Heads. You had
Which
mentioned
one?
Bowie. More around the time of like Remain in Light, when they started experimenting more with funk.
Okay, yeah, I think I see what you're talking about.
Yeah, Girlfriend is Better sort of thing. You had mentioned Bowie, Annie herself, and I don't refer to her as St. Vincent. It's weird to call up her St. Vincent. Even in interviews, she's like, call me Annie. So, you know, I refer to her by her actual name. I saw an interview with Annie. She mentioned Prince. Or I think you had mentioned if she mentioned Prince.
Prince comes through a lot in this one.
Yeah. Love the doubled lead vocal. It's very subtle because the background singers are in there a lot. So if you've got to listen carefully, her vocal is also doubled. Love what I'm going to call tape compression on the when she yells loved. Tape compression assumes they recorded it analog, which is a big ask for an artist who isn't huge. I mean, she's fairly well known, but she's not massive yet. So I don't know if they would have recorded analog. If they did, that's amazing. If not, they did a great job of impersonating tape compression. But tape compression, basically, if you're using analog tape and you just put too much at it. It doesn't clip like digital does. It just adds this nice warm fuzziness to it.
I think she records in a lot of different ways, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of different methods. Uh-huh. And it wouldn't surprise me if analog, you know, some things weren't recorded in an analog
maybe
way.
Maybe some were, maybe they spent the money to do some of it analog. Love all of the vocal effects she has on this one. And yeah. that last note is impressively long.
I think this is the most mass seduction, mm-hmm. her last album, of this whole album, though. This one is really the feeling like it's a continuation from that. And even though it's a bit grittier and it's not as 80s, you know, popish.
And you mentioned mass seduction. I'm glad you brought that up because, admittedly, I wasn't a huge fan of mass seduction at first. It's grown on me a lot. But it was initially a bit too poppy for me. And I, to be honest, blamed a lot of that on Jack Antonoff. I take that back. Because, you know, he also wrote a lot of this one and produced it and played on it. And there's none of that here. I don't know if I ever said it publicly, but if I did, apologies to Jack Antonoff for blaming him for the poppiness of Mass Seduction. Although, like I said, Mass Seduction has grown on me. I really love it now, along with all of her albums. Well, most of her albums. I'm still not sold on Marry Me, but you know.
I find this album very similar to Marry Me. I think I think she revisits a lot of threads from past albums, and I feel Marry Me is, I think there's a lot of similarities running through this album to kind of make a complete circle.
To be fair and honest, I haven't given Marry Me as much attention as I have the others. I kind of have only really skimmed it.
It's not an album to skim because it goes in, things go in directions. Okay.
Because to me, from what I've heard of it, it's not really, it doesn't sound like the rest of her stuff. She hadn't found her sound yet.
You know, she's doing, and back then she's doing a very like 1940s kind of thing, but then it gets into, there's like some weird things that get like woven into it. You're just like, wait, what?
I'll have to give it a bit more of a chance. But
a bit tribal times with this 1940s thing, so it makes a wonderful juxtaposition.
But back to Daddy's Home. This one to me, even though it's got that 70s skin, the 70s palette, this is still a St. Vincent album.
Yes.
This is
definitely.
The song structures, the writing, it's still St. Vincent. You know, Annie Clark is still Annie Clark. Her sensibilities are still her sensibilities, even if she's skinning them in 70s. You know?
It's a new, you know, style to explore, you know, an effort to not repeat yourself, you know.
But the songwriting, change the instrumentation and the songwriting would still fit, would fit just as well on a previous album, I think. On to track two, Down and Out Downtown. This is, I think, both of our favorites at this point.
Strongest for this album.
Yeah.
Might even be my favorite St. Vincent song of all time.
It's up there for me. Maybe top two or three, I would say. Digital Witness is still my favorite. But it's this one's definitely up there. I adore the bass part. And Annie played most of the bass. Let's see, Jack played bass on, tracks. He actually played on four tracks, 1, 8, 11, and 13. I thought it was only two. But this one's Annie. Love, love, love the bass line. Love how soft the vocal is. One thing
I describe this just to sum it up as Carol King meets Isaac Hayes.
Yeah, that is very apt.
What's not to love?
She really shows off vocally on this album.
Oh, yeah.
And not just as with great vocals, but the range of what she can do vocally. Admittedly, I've always thought of her more as a musician-composer and kind of less as a singer. But she really holds her own vocally on this.
Definitely. It just has such an epic feel to it. It takes you on this journey just in itself. Yeah. Just even away from the album.
Love the texture that the sitar brings in. That's going to be a recurring note. Love the mood and just how, and this isn't a word I use often, but just how lush the production is.
Yeah. Oh, and it fits through this song.
Yeah.
Easily.
The flute is a great touch. The first of two references to Bodega Roses. It kind of almost bookends the album, which is very interesting. Love how the last verse kind of picks up. It gets a little faster. You know, the Joker with his, you know, funny laugh. The vocal kind of speeds up there. And then just kind of drops at the end. It gets nice and soft. You can hear the congas, which, and there are only a few spots where you can really hear congas on this album. But I love them all. On to track three, title track, Daddy's Home. This one is about her father being released from prison. He was incarcerated 10 years ago for a stock scam.
The zeros were pretty rough, yeah, let's be honest.
She did a great interview with Anthony Fantano, a music reviewer on YouTube, runs the channel The Needle Drop. It's like an hour 15, hour 20, somewhere in there. Really great interview. I'll link to it in the show notes. And she talked about that a bit. And she said she would never have written a song or based an album on it if it hadn't already hit the tabloids.
Yeah.
But there's great percussion at the beginning of this one. The groove is amazing. Love another word I don't use often, but the slinky vocal. Again, there's no other word for it. There's some great screams. love the processing on the guitar solo. There's a phaser, a chorus. I don't know what else. I mean, Annie's notorious for her pedal board. She just loves to use a ton of effects on her guitar work. On her guitar. I would love to get a look at the pedal board for this track.
Despite the content, it's really the only fun song on the album, you know, yeah, where they're kind of being a little whimsical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and I love that juxtaposition about it's not about his release. He was released this year or last year, I think it was.
Yeah.
It was just about visiting him in the prison. And there's a line in the beginning about signing autographs in the visitation room. And she was saying in that interview that actually happened. She went to visit her father, and people asked her to sign autographs. They couldn't bring a cell phone in there for obvious reasons,
right?
And so all she could do was sign autographs. She also, and there were a couple of things in that interview. Again, I'll link to it. That really surprised me. Apparently, she's a big UFC fan.
Really?
I would have never pegged Danny Clark for a UFC fan.
I would not have either, but although, you know, mouthful of blood, you know, kind of. It's got to be a tough thing, mm-hmm, you know, to wrap your head around that your father did something like this. I mean, she directly benefited from it because, I mean, it sent her to college. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know the people that got bilked, if they were compensated at all or not. But most likely not.
She has said, like, it was a white-collar thing, so it wasn't that, you know, that big of a devastation.
It wasn't a Madoff situation.
And it wasn't anything violent.
Yeah.
But she was telling the story about how her father was locked up with the father of, like, a famous UFC fighter. I don't remember the name. and so, you know, one day she was, like, watching one of this guy's fights. And, you know, her father talked about, you know, the fighter's father. They knew each other. And so someone was slagging off that fighter at a bar where she was watching the fight and she almost, like, threw down with the guy. Another surprising thing that she mentioned in the interview, during quarantine, she got into playing Fortnite.
Okay.
To connect with her nephews. Of course, they don't want to play with her because, you know, they're, you know, 30. I'm assuming they're probably teenagers. Of course, they don't want to play with their 30-something aunt.
Yeah.
But she mentioned that she got into Fortnite to play with them and that they don't want to play with her. I've been really binging St. Vincent recently. You know, a new album comes out. Not only am I going to binge the album, but I'm going to binge, you know, everything St. Vincent. Also to prep for this. On to track four, Live in the Dream. Four words there, that's why I punched it like that.
Yeah.
This is literally Us and Them meets Comfortably Numb.
Ah, man. It's also, I'd actually say Burning Bridges from Obscured by Clouds.
You know Floyd a bit better than I do. I definitely hear, I mean, Us and Them is obvious.
I think the guitar solo is pretty close the to Burning that. Bridges. Like, yeah.
Okay. But
it's another Rich Wright, you know, composition where it's just very dreamy like this.
The progression is Us and Them. I've sung Us and Them in the fade and it works.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
But she admitted in that interview that this is straight up Floyd. I still love it. Love all the guitar sounds. Love the vocal harmonies. The sitar, again, adds some great texture. I'm not sure if
I'm into this, you know? Like, something this on the nose, or this close to being on the nose.
That's a fair criticism. Us and Them is probably Us and Them is probably my favorite Floyd song, so I'm here for a tribute to it.
It is a good Floyd song. I can't blame her for doing it.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure if I like it.
I like how the vocal drifts. Sometimes it's a little to the right, sometimes it's a little to the left, sometimes it's in the middle. The great wall of sound in the chorus. Love how the vocal builds in the chorus, too. I do appreciate the message, at least my interpretation of it. And that's another thing she was pointing out. She likes to keep things kind of vague so that the listener can interpret it to fit their own life. I do the same thing with my poetry very intentionally, so I can appreciate that. GHM_poetry on Instagram, cheap plug. Gotta throw that in when I can. But, you know, my interpretation of this, you know, living the dream, for me, it's like, I can't, you know, hope for the things I didn't get in my life. I gotta learn to give them to myself. You know, I can't live in the dream. The dream lives in me. Again, that's my take on it. Her take, it was about fame. And how you can't get lost in fame. That ending solo, it's funny you mentioned it's pretty much straight from Gilmore, because she almost nails Gilmore's tone.
Oh my God, yeah. It's uncanny.
I love that solo.
I had to check to see that Gilmore didn't actually play on the album.
It's not exactly Gilmore's tone, and I'm going to geek out a bit on guitar here. This is some semi-technical stuff. Gilmore typically, you know, famously plays a Fender Strat, three pickups. He has a modification that allows him to turn on the neck. I think it's the neck pickup, regardless of where the other switch is. So he can get two more combinations, all three at once, or the bridge and the neck pickup, which you can't normally do. And that's how he gets this tone that nobody can really truly reproduce without that modification. So I'm impressed that Annie got that close. Her signature model, by the way, I would love to try one of her signature model guitars. I will someday. it has three mini humbuckers, which are similar, have a similar tone to single coils. I'm very impressed that she was able to get this close to Gilmore's tone, and she very much copped his playing style.
Yes.
Would you say this is your pick for weakest?
I'm going second weakest.
Okay. Again, only because it's so close to Floyd.
I think we know what the weakest is going to be.
I'm curious. We may agree. Unless you go with one of the interludes.
No, that's a cop-out.
Yeah. I figured. On to track 5, The Melting of the Sun. To me, this is the most 70s sounding.
Yes, this would be my second strongest.
I love the electric piano in the intro. I'm a sucker for electric piano. I mentioned when we reviewed Hitomi that I've been working on keyboards recently, learning keyboards. And as much as I want to, you know, go into my freeze pop influence and play with synthesizers and get interesting sounds, most of the time I just end up, you know, dialing in a nice electric piano and just chilling out. Love all the slide guitar. Love the lyrics about Marilyn Monroe. Poor Marilyn.
All the lyrics, just all the people, you know, paying tribute to all these women that came before her in this.
All these women who came before her and were ostracized for really having a message and standing up for something.
Or just standing up for themselves.
Or standing up for themselves. And you know, My Marilyn, what is it? My Marilyn, something heroin. I'm blanking on the lyrics now.
Shot heroin. Shot heroin.
Thank you. Shutter heroin, she said it's better than abuse. Love that line. I just want to quote a line, go back a couple of songs. Oh. I forgot, I got sidetracked. The last half of the last verse of Daddy's Home, I got to shout that out real fast. We're all born innocent, but some good saints get screwed. What hell, what can you do when the outlaw's inside you? given some of my misspent youth and adulthood, some of which you're very familiar with, I love that line. Definitely relate to it. Back to Melting of the Sun. Better than Abuse. Love that part. It's a tribute to all these women who came before her. Who,
and not just that, just wondering, you know, am I worthy of this?
Yeah.
You know, pissing away, you know, their accomplishments?
I never cried. To tell the truth, I lied. And it's also about watching the patriarchy fall. That's the melting of the sun.
You hope.
You know, that, well, she said directly, that's what she was talking about. You know, all these women, you know, who were revolutionary. Joni Mitchell.
I'm saying that's being a bit optimistic.
Oh, yeah. Nina Simone getting involved with the, you know, civil rights movement. Tori Amos talking about her rape. And then it's just the melting of the sun. I want to watch you watch it burn. I want to be there with you and hope that I am shoulder to shoulder to you when we take it down. More to the point of saying, I hope I play a part in that.
Yeah.
And I love the sort of spaceship sound at the end as it comes to this amazing cold stop.
Right. This whole song, I remember the first time I listened to it, it was just kind of like the first, couple minutes are just kind of like, oh, you know, whatever, just mellow kind of, okay, whatever. That's what they want to go to. And then that guitar solo kicks.
Both solos are amazing. That's the last note I have on this. Both solos are amazing.
And it just kind of like, it's one of those, stop what you're doing.
Yeah.
And listen to this and just let it wash over you. and the song just flips into this celebration, you know, as they watch it burn.
Yeah. On to track 6, Humming Interlude 1.
This is where the album takes like a really strange turn. Like it then becomes this really atmospheric thing.
She explained in that interview with Anthony Fantano that her mother used to hum all the time. And she said, like, if I could compile all the music she hummed throughout her life, I'd probably have a symphony. So that's what she's talking about in the lyrics.
It's like something out of The Shining, though, you know? Yeah. It's like...
And she didn't mention this, so I may be dead wrong, but I have a suspicion that that was a song that she was maybe working on but never was able to really complete, but they made the best of it. They kind of made the most of it that they could.
With the three of them, or maybe they're from one, or maybe they're three different things.
I think she was going to write a song about that, and it just didn't quite work out to a full song, so they just turned it into these three short interludes. Maybe.
And the feel of the album moves back to, you know, Marry Me more from this point, you know, where it's that kind of softer approach to it.
Well, for the most part, there's one notable exception coming up. But
yeah,
before we get to that, on to track 7, The Laughing Man. Love the call and response at the beginning of this one. You know, 911. Hello, can I help you?
Yes. It took me maybe a couple listens to catch that, you know, because it's kind of underneath everything. Yeah. Or maybe I thought it was like outside the headphones at first.
Yeah. Right. I love that. Love the vocal melody. Loved the phased off-kilter guitar arpeggios in the second half of the first verse. Like there's always a lot of guitar on her records because she's a guitar player. But I feel like she's really highlighting the guitar on this one.
And I think the difference between this and the song What Me Worry from Marry Me is that was more of a piano bass, orchestra kind of, more of a classic 40s thing, where this is moving it into a 70s, you know.
But I feel like maybe because it's 70s and the guitar was, you know, super relevant in the 70s,
she's
really focusing on the guitar on this album. And, you know, she is one of the best guitarists of the last 20 years.
Easy. Yeah.
Easily. The guitar hero of the thousands and 2010s.
Or 2010s, because
she wasn't active in the thousands, but the guitar hero of the last 10 years, because she's only been active for about that long, but One of the greats.
And, you know, honestly, there's a lot of dudes that shut her out though because she's
Oh,
not
yeah.
a dude.
Right. And that's a, you know, to quote a Disney song, tale as old as time. Talk to Nancy Wilson about that.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, she's an amazing guitar player. And it's not so much, yeah, she can be very technical. I saw a short video on YouTube of her, and this I saw a while ago. I think I sent it to you. It was like a life in six licks or something of that nature, or six riffs. And she was just playing all of these riffs that, you know, influenced her coming up. She's sitting there with an acoustic guitar, her black and white acoustic. If you've ever seen her play an acoustic gig, you know the guitar I'm talking about. And she's ripping into like Pantera and Tool.
That's great.
She knows her shit. She has her technique down. But the thing I love about her playing is she's just so creative and melodic.
Yeah.
And just interesting.
And she can play while dancing in heels.
That too. and doing that weird walk across stage. And again, I need to look into her pedal board because it's fascinating.
That was one hell of a show, even though she didn't actually have a band behind her. It was, you know, pre-recorded music and her playing the guitar over it, but it was still...
I saw a show like that recently on YouTube. Was it the Mass Seduction Tour?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like her in a backing track with just playing guitar and singing. Kind of odd. And this gets to, you know, she's going to be touring for this. She announced tour dates.
This is going to be a band, though. This is going to be a lot of people complained about her not having live musicians with her.
Yeah, this is of course a full band. If you've seen her on SNL or Fallon last night, and if you haven't, I highly recommend looking on YouTube for them. There's going to be a full band, great band. But she was talking about, you know, with the older songs, is she going to adapt them for this or play them, you know, as expected?
Good question.
And
her set list was really interesting because she went back in time. Mm-hmm. You know, she started with, you know, Mass Seduction stuff and then worked her way back to Marry Me at the end.
She did the opposite of the show that I saw on YouTube, went from Marry Me forward. But she said she was going to mix it up. Some she'll do old, you know, like they are on the record. Some she'll do 70s style. She does some very interesting reimaginings of songs live. In that concert I saw, when she got to self-titled, she did Digital Witness into Rattlesnake, two of my absolute favorites of hers.
Yeah.
I love self-titled. It's my favorite. Was not a fan of what she did with Digital Witness. Loved what she did with Rattlesnake. So her the way she kind of reimagines things, it's a bit of a mixed bag. But I would love to hear her older stuff, particularly like Mass Seduction, self-titled era, reimagined with this band in this style.
Definitely, especially with these singers and everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's gonna be great.
Back to Laughing Man. Love the delivery, the dramatic delivery of the key line. If life's a joke, I'm dying laughing.
Yeah.
Like how she just slips in a reference to suicidal ideation.
Oh.
As someone with mental health issues who is no stranger to suicidal ideation, I just got a kick out of that. Also love the just a cappella cold stop. It's just her voice, one track of her voice. I'm dying laughing. Love that ending. And I've mentioned her lyrics a lot, which is unusual for this album, or unusual for her. Because, I mean, her lyrics are interesting and very clever. But they usually don't resonate with me. Don't hit me that hard until this album. They really jumped out.
She tells some great stories. I think it was a lot of the appeal of Mass Seduction, mm-hmm. where it was just this continuing story with Johnny and, you know.
But, you know, they're interesting. They're certainly clever. I was recently reading the lyrics to Huey Newton. Very interesting references.
Yeah.
And one of the greatest riffs in rock and roll history.
Although, let's be honest, lyrically, is there anything hidden in plain sight, subversive than Birth in Reverse?
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that meaning of that song went right over their head.
Yeah. Right. But the lyrics on this album really resonated with me in a lot of cases, which is unusual for Annie. Like I said, her lyrics are interesting and certainly very clever, but this time, a lot of cases, this time they really hit me. Speaking of track 8, Down, the exception to everything getting
that, I have to call out a segue that bad.
Oh, okay. What?
Penalty box.
Why? Talking about interesting lyrics, the first line of this album, this
you
song
said
is interesting.
It hit you.
Oh, that was completely unintentional. I apologize.
If I had a whistle, I would have blown it.
I apologize. Completely unintentional.
I have a yellow handkerchief here that you can't see, and I've just tossed it.
Anyway, before I get to the lyric,
yes.
The bass sound on this. It's a synthesizer again. It sounds like a modular synthesizer. She's only credited with playing modular on track 1, but it definitely has that vibe to it. A modular synthesizer, for those who don't know, it's a synthesizer without a keyboard. So you're just controlling it with switches and dials and buttons. Sounds like that, but it's apparently not, because she only played modular on the first one. Love the opening lyric. Hit me one time, imagine my surprise. Hit me 2 times, you got yourself a fight. It's a bad and abusive relationship.
Yeah.
I love the attitude. It's you step to me, I will take you down.
Right. Get her.
Great funk rhythm guitar on the verse. Best overall lyrics on the album, I would say.
Musically, it reminds me a lot of stuff Peter Gabriel had been putting out.
Yeah, I can hear that.
Or recently.
I've had an interesting relationship with this song, because it was the third single. I heard it after Pay Away and Pain and Melting of the Sun. And I first saw it on YouTube, and I think for the first few times I heard it, I liked it, but it didn't really leave an impression on me, like Melting or Pay Away and Pain did. It was just kind of there. It was good, fun, but it kind of passed. The more
this
I hear it,
grew.
Hmm?
This one grew on me too.
Yeah, the more I hear it, the more I love it. It's my second favorite now. Love the way the background singers bounce the word down in the chorus. It just kind of just goes back and forth. Great instrumental verse. Love the last verse. I know I'm blanking on it. Gotta look at the lyrics.
The sound is similar to Mass Seduction. It's kind of like the last gasp of that in the album. It's just, of course, you know, got a lot more soul than what she was doing on Mass Seduction, because that was a very clean, electric album, whereas this is just kind of a grittier thing.
Yeah. Thank you for giving me a chance to look that up.
You know, I've done this on a more professional basis long, long ago, but, you know, setting up, installing, and killing time.
Yeah, I've done it for you, and you've Googled things.
But, you know, I guess we've ran out then, huh?
I
thought you were there.
Here it is. Here it is.
See.
It's
you
very
can
small.
Edit this.
It's
out.
Very small. Right. I'm not editing shit.
Okay.
Go get your own shit, get off of my tit, go face your demons, check into treatment, go flee the country, go blame your daddy, just get far away from me. Love that lyric.
And yeah, there's a lot in Mass Seduction where it's, you know, about the relationship where, you know, one's on all sorts of pills and one's drunk all day, you know.
But it's, I just, again, I love the attitude. I love the short guitar solo after the last verse. It's just, it's almost a riff more than a solo, but it just has a great tone to it. And the sitar riff in the chorus, I've never appreciated sitar as much as I did after hearing this album.
I've always liked it if it's just a little accent, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever liked it where it's used this much. You know, I think if it's been used this much, usually I'm kind of like, okay. But I feel like it's not repetitive. I feel like it's a normal part of the album.
Yeah. It just fits. Even though it's like a decade or half a decade before, the reference is like half a decade before. Incidentally, I saw another video where she mentioned 5 albums that really influenced this one. It was Pretzel Logic by Steely Dan, Talking Book by Stevie Wonder, the World is a Ghetto by War, and it was a War album without Eric Burdon. I didn't know they did anything without Eric Burdon.
Huh.
Fragile by Yes, which was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, particularly, I don't think I hear Fragile.
Particularly the bass tone on Long Distance Runaround is what she called out. She also called out Any Major Dude Will Tell You on Pretzel Logic. Maybe Your Baby on Talking Book. Cisco Kid on The World is a Ghetto. And the last album, she didn't mention a song, but it was Dance to the Music by Sly and the Family Stone, which is obvious. On to track 9, Humming Interlude 2. This is really just a soundscape with some interesting harmonies.
Yeah, just some ghostly effects. Yeah. It's kind of a I don't know, a way to take you, I almost said down from down.
Oh, yeah, now, what I mean. Now it's your turn to get to put a flag on the play.
I stopped myself, though, and said I was going to, but I knew it. All right.
On to track 10, Somebody Like Me. This is, I think, the first real departure for me. The first one that was kind of unexpected. It's a predominantly acoustic song on a St. Vincent record, which I would never have expected. And it's a bit country.
Yes.
Reminds me of Everybody's Talking.
She uses this country western guitar style on Mass Seduction, like at the end of Los Ageless. If you listen to the end of Los Ageless, you can definitely hear this guitar playing throughout the last verse.
Yeah. But I love the pedal steel in the chorus. Like, she leans this in one other song, she really leans into country. Love the low vocal, you know, because it's a bit lower than most of her vocals. And the way, and the jump up in the second verse, and the way her voice matches the pedal steel solo at the end.
I just like how understated this is, you know, it doesn't come off the first couple times you listen to it, but then you're like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Just, you know, acoustic and a drum machine and guitar at the same time, just really, and the background singers just give it more of this ghostly effect that kind of carry over from the interlude before. Yeah.
And if you pay attention to the lyrics, it's basically saying, like, who would ever want to be with me?
This totally could have fit into Marry Me also. Mm-hmm. And I'm honestly looking forward to this one live more than anything else, because I think
that'll
this one
interesting.
Could destroy live, and I hope she plays it.
On to track 11, My Baby Wants a Baby. Shall we say it together?
Yes, let's say it together.
This is the weakest.
Easily.
This one directly references the melody to Morning Train, also known as 9 to 5 by Sheena Easton. Morning Train,
or known as The Thing That Should Not Be.
Morning Train in the U.S., so as not to confuse it with the Dolly Parton song.
right.
But I'm pretty much allergic to that song.
And it's funny, because this could be my least favorite St. Vincent song ever.
Wow.
Because within the same album of my favorite ever, it just shows, you know, she's taking chances.
And it was, or not necessarily was co-written, but Flory Palmer, who wrote Morning Train, got writing credit on this one. I gave my notes because I typed on my phone. It was Flory Palmer, which I found amusing. I do like the verses. It's just the chorus I don't like because of Morning Train.
And it was funny because before I even had a chance to listen to this album, you listened to it like the midnight release. I think you texted me at like 1 in the morning or something. And just like,
I first heard this like around 12:30 a.m.
Yeah.
She put all of the songs up that she hadn't yet on YouTube, except for the humming interludes. So I listened to it there, and then I listened to it on Spotify, and then I skimmed it. Actually, I didn't even give it full listens. I skimmed through it both times. And then at 1:01 a.m., I bought it on iTunes, and then I messaged you and said, you know, I think it was before I'd get, because I didn't give it a full listen, proper listen, until the next day. I messaged you and said, I just skimmed through the new St. Vincent album. Or I think I specifically said Daddy's Home, because we both were waiting for it.
Yeah.
And I said, I have two words for Annie Clark, Sheena Easton.
And so, you know, this is late in the album, so we've gone through 10 songs. Uh-huh. And I'm kind of like,
Why
what the
she
fuck
needs
was
them?
he talking about? What the hell does he mean by that? And then just within the first line, it was like, why the fuck would anybody do this?
And then I asked you, do you hear a metric fuck ton of Pink Floyd like I do? And yes, you
Yeah.
do.
Oh, God, yeah.
But I
Now,
do
this one,
back to
it's
my
better than
baby.
the original, but I mean,
Yeah.
that's not saying
I
much.
do like the verses. I love the line, I want to play guitar all day, make all my wheels in microwaves, only dress up when I get paid. I've lived that lifestyle. 10 out of 10, would recommend. And I just like how big the last verse gets, and then there's just this nice soft cold stop. On to track 12, At the Holiday Party, another departure. By the way, in that same interview I've been referencing, she mentioned that Somebody Like Me and At the Holiday Party, the two, for me, departures, were the first two songs she wrote for the album.
And this one, I would say, is the most, and here's a word I could coin, I guess, canyony of the album.
Okay.
I mean, she was going for that canyon feel for a lot of this album,
That
I
like
think.
Southern California Canyon?
Yeah,
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
And I would think this one, it
Yeah,
hits that the most.
definitely. This
And
is
I'm not a
you.
huge fan of the canyon
No.
sound, but I think, but I like this, and I think this could also destroy live.
You mentioned Carly Simon earlier. This is very Carly Simon.
Yeah, I think it was Carole
Oh, you
King
mentioned Carole
I went
King.
with.
Yeah, this is very Carly Simon. This is very much in that 70s Southern California. Even though she says she was going for the New York thing. This is almost country. Still love it, though. Love the soft vocal. The line, pretend to want these things so no one sees you not getting what you need, hit me like a fucking 2-ton heavy thing. Because, I mean, the Persa Pharmacy line, not relevant to me. But in recent years, since I've been in therapy, I've been very open about some mental health stuff. But before then, I'm traditionally very fucking stoic. You have to know me real well to see any emotion. That line just fucking called me out. Love the horn part after the chorus. Just these nice mellow, very 70s horns. I want to know how they were recorded because
I
they
was thinking
totally
Rolling
captured that.
Stones, but I think you nailed it more with Carly Simon more than the Rolling Stones.
I love how it's just nice and soft in the verses. Good to hear the conga. How gets nice and soft in the ver in second verse. Gets nice and soft. Get to hear the congas again. I type my notes on a phone these days because I'm in bed, and there are a lot of typos. I apologize for stumbling over them. Love how the ending just builds and then drops.
I think the weird thing about this one I picked up on the last listen, it's very similar in melody to Every Tear Disappears from Self-Titled. It's
Okay.
almost like an unplugged version
Yeah,
of
yeah.
that with throw in the horns, of
Right,
course,
right.
because that was a very electric,
Yeah, of course.
keyboard, dance almost, And it also has that weird moment that some great 70s albums have, where it just kind of like you've hit the climax of the album, that like the singers kind of break down a bit, and it's just kind of gives you the feel like you're at this party almost,
Yeah, it does have that. I mean, it's at the holiday party, and it definitely has that feel. And it's there's nothing, holiday in the arrangement.
No.
It just has something about it. Just, I mean, the lyrics paint that picture beautifully, but it's also just something about the feel of the song. Like, I could hear this on at a Christmas party.
I guess I'll have to add this to my holiday
Yeah.
playlist. I didn't think of that.
On to track 13, Candy Darling. Candy Darling, by the way, was a trans actress who worked a lot with Andy Warhol and was the frequent muse for Velvet Underground. This is basically a tribute to her. It's short, but like I was talking about with Jasmine Rogers a few weeks ago, it doesn't seem to lack anything. It's enough.
Right. It's just, well, I mean, this is kind of denouement for the album, really.
Sort of.
And she does, She does a lot of this throughout her career, like towards the end of the album where things just kind of trail away. I even mentioned that one song earlier from Marry Me where it's literally the last note is disappear, the last word of the album.
In terms of length, interludes aside, this is by far the shortest. But I love the vocal. It's just this great, and again, a term I don't use very often. This album has me pulling out weird words, but a smoky vocal.
You're gonna love Marry Me.
I apparently I need to dig into Marry Me.
Because I mean, she hits all of that in
Oh
Marry
wow.
Me.
Because honestly, it's the one I haven't really listened to. Because you had said yourself when we reviewed Actor that Marrow was when she found her sound, and I skimmed Marry Me and I was like, yeah, this isn't really St. Vincent sounding. So I never
But
really gave
sometimes
it a
it's
full.
really fun to listen to an artist look for their
Yeah,
sound.
yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's people that want a finished, polished product and want everything nicely. I mean, obviously, if you've listened to us long enough, guys, you can tell where what school at least I'm coming from.
Yeah, I'm still debating how much of that little tobacco with the down lyrics I'm going to cut.
Decisions, decisions.
There's also this is also the second Bodega reference, Bodega Roses reference.
Right. I don't think I caught the first Bodega Roses reference, but this one you definitely
Yeah,
hear.
very clear in
I
this one.
heard.
She mentions it's in the chorus,
I mean, this
practically.
could have been a longer song. Normally, I'm always like, oh, you got to cut. But this one could have gone on longer. There's so much potential. But, sometimes it's good to leave you wanting more.
But the Bodega references, Bodega Roses references are in track 2 and track 13 on a 14-track album. They all but bookend. I love that.
I mean, I'll take a guess. Is that like you care, but you didn't care long enough
Well, I mean,
to plan on getting something better?
if you, for those who don't know what a bodega is, it's basically a corner store. It's a convenience store, but yet you find on the corners in New York City. Bodega is like, I think it's Spanish for like store, or something very mundane like that. Then there are specific items that all bodegas have that you don't find in any, like a Quick Check or a 7-Eleven. They're roses that you bought, just kind of on the way at a little convenience store instead of like at a proper florist. Because you probably forgot, so you ran, you just stopped at the closest bodega and picked them up. And it's so they kind of fit the theme in Down and Out Downtown. Because it's kind of a morning after thing. I don't know enough about Candy Darling to see what to know what the reference is here. But I love the melody in this one. I love all the reverb on what I'm calling the bridge, even though it's not really a traditional structure. And onto finally track 14, humming interlude 3. Again, it's just a continuation of that first one with the vocal because we get more lyrics here, although they're harder to understand. Much more of
It almost sounds like she's starting to sing "You Take the High Road to Scotland," but she—it's something. It goes off into something else
Okay.
other than that.
It's more about the humming in the same lyrical theme as the first part. There's much more of an effect on it. So, a absolutely unnecessary question. Do you recommend it?
I absolutely do recommend it. I don't know if this would be a good introduction to Saint Vincent.
No.
But I would definitely recommend it. I think she's at a real crossroads here, she could forge ahead and do some, go out into a different direction after revisiting her past, or she can keep going back. I don't know what she's going to do though.
Well, she always changes things. This is what I was been thinking about this because, like I said, I've been binging. First, obviously, I absolutely recommend it, strenuously. But I don't think it's a good introduction to St. Vincent. Your introduction, if you've never heard a St. Vincent album, Actor's the one that turned V on to her. But I think either Strange Mercy or Self-Titled would be the best introduction because those are kind of her baseline sound.
It's rare that I pick the right album to introduce someone to, and this one I this one I did it.
So I would go with Strange Mercy or self-titled. But those two, I think, are the only two in her discography that are significantly similar. You know?
Yeah. Either Actor or Love This Giant. Because, I mean, if you're familiar with...
If you're a Talking Heads David Byrne fan, yeah, definitely go for Love This Giant.
Definitely. Because it's there's so much to it.
You know, Actor had kind of a 40s thing. She was going for that movie score, you know, Golden Era movie score vibe.
Both Marry Me and Actor.
Okay, Marry Me has the same thing.
Yeah.
And then she went into that kind of alt-pop thing with Strange Mercy and self-titled. Got a little more jarring with self-titled, which is probably the reason I love it. Went super pop with Mass Seduction. Now she's going 70s. You know, it's the Bowie thing.
Yeah.
And it's a tired comparison, but she earns it. She changes it up every time.
I'd say she's changed more frequently than he did.
Yeah. Well, really, yeah, fair. And in a much shorter time.
It feels like she's done a character every couple of albums, just about.
I would almost say I was actually earlier today thinking about this. Her appearance was very much the same for the first three albums.
Yeah.
She didn't really change her appearance until self-titled, when she went, you know, when she bleached her hair and kind of went for that stark, you know, pointy dress and all of that. And then Mass Seduction, she slicked her hair back and wore the you know, unitard or, you know, catsuit, whatever you call it. And here she's going with the 70s look and the bob wig. But, you know, she's changing it up every album. I'm not going to make any guesses where she's going to go next because I want to be surprised.
I'd like to see a full-blown prog sound on the next one.
I am glad you reminded me of that. In that Anthony Fantano interview, he directly asks her, "Have you ever thought about going full-on prog?"
Oh, I hope so. What was her answer?
She said she's thought about it.
I mean, she's got the Mellotron already.
Yeah.
You've got the Mellotron.
And she's got the chops. she said she's thought about it, but kind of been like, I don't know if I want to go that far into it. Because, you know, she is a songwriter and a composer first and foremost.
I mean, there's got to be some fucked up story that she could just take and deliver on, you know?
Oh, yeah. The vibe I was getting, she didn't directly say this, but while she is an incredible musician, she's kind of, the reason she's reluctant to go full prog is she doesn't really want to get into the wankery.
You don't have to, though.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a lot of different ways of doing it.
Right.
And you can blow some minds.
Well, and I think that's the reason a lot, we've mentioned Pink Floyd a lot for obvious reasons in this review. A lot of people don't really think of them as prog. They're seen more as acid rock because they didn't really wank.
Right, they're the lightest of the progs, if you think about it, because you know there was so much blues to, you know, ground people, and you know they really didn't go out there that much.
You have kind of, you know, Floyd and I would argue Genesis on one end, kind of more about the songs and the stories and less about the wankery.
Yeah,
and then you have like Crimson and Rush on the other end,
and ELP.
ELP, yeah, yeah. I can't forget ELP.
I mean, ELP was like, we've got the wankery. Let's build a song like around that.
The wankery, yeah.
Let's sing Jerusalem at the beginning.
Let's do an old classic. Let's do an old classical piece so Emerson can wank for 20 minutes.
Hoedown.
Yeah.
Really. All right.
Anyway, that's it for Daddy's Home. Until next time, when we'll be actually getting to some prog with This Sonic Landscape by Alphonia. Always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.